This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
College football, the rich getting richer. Shocker. Welcome to the show. Pearl off on vacation. EJ Stewart sliding over for Pearl. And, you know, it was a report that came out yesterday, EJ, and you can tell that this sort of weather balloon's getting floated out there. Yep. Kind of get the public sort of ready to hear the news, which is in 2026, which will be here before we know it, that the SEC and the Big Ten are going to make a proposal where not only will the college football playoff expand from 12 teams to either 14 or 16, but basically the Big Ten and the SEC want to take over this tournament. And how they would do it is that they would give themselves four automatic qualifiers each. Now, after that, Big 12 would get two, ACC would get two.
Yep.
And they might be thrilled about that, to be honest. The Group of Five would get one. Notre Dame would automatically get a bid if they're ranked inside the top 14. And then whatever's left goes to, I guess, the committee. I don't even know why you would need a committee
right,
at this point.
Yeah.
Just take the AP poll and do it off of that.
Yeah, I hate this. The more I think about it, the more I realize that the whole excitement about the playoff and the whole excitement about trying to figure out who's the best team. Like, there actually, I know there was a lot of anger, and I was part of that anger, over what happened over the college football playoff and where teams end up being ranked. But that's also good for the sport. Like, It's good for March Madness that there is these quabbles about this team should have got in, that team should have got in. It gives you a day or two of being atop of the headlines where maybe we wouldn't even be caring about who's the last team and who's the last team out when we're talking about basically every spot being guaranteed.
Yeah, right.
Like, I think that
not a lot of drama.
Yeah, I think that there is actually something good about that drama. That if you just eliminate all of it and then you eliminate the drama of the regular season. The one sport where I feel like the regular season still matters the most, and you say, you know what, like, it's really just a numbers game. It doesn't matter when Alabama loses in a big spot. It doesn't matter when LSU loses in a big spot. What are the wins and losses, and where are they in their standings in the SEC? As long as they're in the right standings, then that's all we need. And I don't think it fixes the problem of these teams in these bloated conferences being able to get away with terrible schedules. Because, yes, the SEC will have to play an extra game, but there's not – all games aren't equal in the SEC.
Exactly.
When you're playing against Kentucky, you're playing against Vanderbilt. It's not the same as when you're playing against Texas or you're playing against Georgia. It's a totally different thing. And because those conferences have made themselves, quote unquote, too big to fail in a way, now you're going to have teams like in Indiana last year. And I guarantee you it's going to happen in the SEC too. In some ways, Texas was that team this year. Like, they really only
didn't have to play anybody.
They only played Georgia. They lost.
Yeah. And still got in.
Still got in.
Yeah.
Not a conversation. You know why? Because they're in the SEC, and we give them those flowers and we give them that respect. But there's going to be a lot of other teams that are going to have that same situation happen in this tournament. And then they're going to show up in the playoffs, and they're going to get smoked and be like, oh, man, maybe we should have realized they weren't that good. Now we don't even have that conversation anymore.
They're
guaranteed spots.
The other part about this, too, and I know that if Perloff was here, he would disagree about this, but none of us can tell the future. You know, what was the biggest complaint about this year's college football playoff, at least the first round?
The games were terrible.
Games are terrible. Blowouts, right? And everyone wants to change everything because of all these blowouts. What makes you think we're not getting blowouts if you change this format?
Oh, yeah.
You're like putting in a fourth SEC team or a fourth Big Ten team so that it can be Rutgers,
right.
Northwestern, so that it can be Vanderbilt.
Michigan State, yeah.
You know,
even
to be honest,
better teams.
Bad to say Vanderbilt this year because they did pull off an all-time upset against Alabama, but that was decades in the making, right?
Yeah.
So it's like if you think you're getting a better quality of game, not so fast, as Lee Corso would say.
Yeah.
I don't think you're necessarily guaranteed to have a better quality of game. I think there were other things and other tweaks that could have been made to the 12-team format that could have made this a lot better. Like, for example, the teams that got first-round byes, the Oregons, yeah. the Boises, give them home games,
yeah.
okay? Maybe we don't put them in some, you know, kind of like atmosphere, like a less than awesome atmosphere, yeah. where it feels really corporate and you're basically just in a neutral site NFL stadium,
exactly.
as opposed to the pomp and circumstance of your own stadium.
That's very true, because I think Oregon might have had the worst possible bracket a number one overall seed has ever had
in
college
disgrace.
Sports.
Disgrace. They got absolutely no reward for yeah. being a number one overall seed. In fact, you had to play Ohio State, who had taken you to the wire earlier in the season, and you had to play them in the Rose Bowl. Like, it just, I didn't love it. I felt like we could have done some tweaks, but if you think this is going to solve that, well, can I offer and present Exhibit A, which was Tennessee, who mm-hmm. went on the road and lost to Ohio State. Just because you're in the SEC doesn't mean you're automatically going to give us a great game.
And the issue with the SEC, too, I have, and it's one of the issues I think that some of these other small conferences have, or in small, I mean, ACC is not small, but, you know, it's not the big
compared.
10 of the SEC, is when you play in those conferences, every week, because we automatically just give respect to the teams in the SEC, every week you get opportunities to show that you're quote-unquote better. So what happens is Tennessee had 1 week where they beat Alabama.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, well, they're great. Like, they beat Alabama. It doesn't matter that they had other losses on their schedule. We give them automatic respect because they have so many opportunities to play against quote-unquote top teams. When you're a Miami or an SMU or you're an Arizona State or you're a BYU, like, you don't get, unless you get them in non-conference, you don't get those opportunities. So there's an assumption that those teams aren't as good, but the SEC two schools, they can win one of those games and then lose multiple games.
Right.
Against teams that aren't even as good as those top SEC teams, but we give them the respect because they're in the SEC, because they have those three letters next to them, and because they have all the opportunities to play against good teams. You can work your way out of a jam. The fact that Alabama and Ole Miss couldn't get to the playoff, despite the fact they were in the SEC, is actually more of an indictment on them. Because you get so many more opportunities against good teams to rack up your resume.
Oh, listen.
It's your fault you're losing to Kentucky and Vanderbilt, but there should be a penalty for that.
If you're Alabama, you beat Oklahoma like you were a 21-point favorite or whatever they were. I don't remember. You're in. And if you were Ole Miss and you just won at Florida at the end of the season.
Or beat Kentucky earlier in the season.
Or they lost to Kentucky and then they had a win over Georgia, but it wasn't enough because they weren't able to beat that Florida in that
last game. In this expanded playoff, those teams are getting in because we're just going to say, you know what? Like, they lost some terrible losses, but you know what? Because of the schedule, because there's just so many good teams in their conference, quote unquote, we have to give them the respect.
Listen, I don't want to be naive here. We're talking about some of the changes that are coming down the pike to college football. The Big Ten and the SEC are going to really flex their muscle to try to get four automatic bids for themselves each, for each. So eight automatic bids from the SEC and the Big Ten in a future college football playoff that would start in 2026. That's the report. I don't want to be naive here. The SEC has enjoyed a boost and a bump because they have earned it and deserved it, I think, in the past. I do. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not be naive. It is hard to go play at LSU at night. It is sure. hard to go play at Texas at night or in the day. It's hard to go into Tuscaloosa and win, whether Nick Saban's there or not. These are challenging places to play. You go to the swamp, that's not a picnic, okay?
Going between the hedges, it's a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Good luck to you. And the SEC has earned that. The problem is we are in a totally different world in college football now. And where Alabama and Georgia could stack five-star after five-star after five-star, now they're only going two deep at five-stars. Mm-hmm. Now it's not four deep.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw that with Georgia even with their quarterback situation, right? Like, they would have had another guy ready to go to replace Carson Beck at a moment, but I don't think they actually had a guy who was better than Beck.
Right.
And so, and we saw the backup,
Stockton,
and he tried, you know, and he basically, like, ran his head into a brick wall trying to help Georgia win a game.
That was a wild man out there.
He's crazy. But anyway, I think that's like what we're getting at, which is if this was 10 years ago, give the SEC everything. Mm-hmm. Give the Big Ten everything. But now, when guys are the talents all over the country, and it's not just the SEC is definitely getting the best and brightest and everyone else besides like Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan have to pick up the pieces, it's a different world now. Should they still enjoy the same like perks when they may not be as strong top to bottom as they used to be? Yeah, I think that's where we're getting.
Yeah, you're coming up with a solution for 5 years ago when we're talking about 5 years down the line.
Right.
You're talking about what is the future of college football and what it looks like. This answer that you're giving in terms of how to fix the college football playoff is an answer that would have made sense 5 years ago. I just don't think it's going to make sense 5 to 10 years from now. I think it's going to be totally different. And look, the one good thing about this is in college football, it's like Perloff says, it's a completely corrupt sport. So they're going to make the rules up as they go. They're going to make this rule up today, and then tomorrow they're going to find something else. Say, oh, you know what? Let's change the rules because it doesn't make sense. Like, this college football playoff has already changed 3 times.
There's
going to be multiple changes here. So I think maybe while I may be angry today, there may be an opportunity where this thing gets fixed down the road.
All right, 855-212-4227. We're asking you, do the SEC and the Big Ten deserve this outsized power in the college football playoff? Couldn't do it yesterday because EJ was holding down the fort and I took the day off, but let's get to the M&P 500.
The M&P 500 on the Infinity Sports Network.
Okay, a little stock up, stock down from a long, very extended President's Day weekend. I'm going to go stock up here first and foremost. And my first stock up is going to go to hockey. The Four Nations Cup, gangbusters. Loving it. Wasn't really expecting to love it, quite frankly. Not really a big hockey all-star break person. But this has been phenomenal. Feels like there's real stakes. Guys are playing hard. We're getting some cool fights. Feels like a little geopolitical even with like, I didn't think USA and Canada would have this much beef, but here we are. and hopefully not more in the future.
Yes.
But it's been gangbusters at a time when every league is trying to figure out how to do this thing. Hockey nailed it. They are stock up.
Yeah, keep the beef on the ice, but definitely this Four Nations tournament has been awesome. My stock up, I want to give a shout out to Mac McClung because I was one of those folks who I defended Mac McClung's first two runs in the dunk contest that they absolutely needed him. It didn't matter that he was a G League player. And I thought year three, I'm like, is this novelty going to run out?
Yeah.
And then the guy brought out a car. And then he jumped over a guy in a car. And then he had a guy on a hoverboard, and he jumped over that guy. And then he brought in Evan Mobley, put him on a platform, and then he jumped over that guy. I mean, Mac McClung, you say whatever you want about the dunk contest and how much is watered down. You don't have a pulse if you were not entertained by what he did. He was phenomenal. If you want to have the best dunkers, maybe not in the NBA, but NBA adjacent, let's say, in the dunk contest, Mac McClung belonged. And now he's a 3-time champion. He put on an absolute show. He saved All-Star Saturday night because that was a disgrace with the Spurs and what was happening with them. They had two of the worst dunk contest guys ever before him. And, you know, Matas Buzelis and Andre Jackson. So shout out to Mac McClung. He gets the stock up.
If the stock goes up, the stock goes down. This is the M&P 500, and I did not think I was going to ever give this guy a stock down. It's Kevin Hart. Oh, my gosh. Just brutal. And he was the MC of the NBA All-Star. It was far too much Kevin Hart. Is that even possible? I like Kevin Hart. He's hilarious. And I thought he was kind of like 100% approval rating kind of guy, except for Cat Williams, obviously. But I thought, like, he's funny. He was funny in the roast of Tom Brady. Like, Kevin Hart can do his thing, but for some reason, they just had him out there way too long, way too much time on the mic. And by extension, his stock went down. People wanted him, like, Amateur Night at the Apollo, like, sweep him off the stage.
Yeah, where's the cane? Just bring his grip by the neck and just pull him away.
Vaudeville style. Just like yank this dude off. Unplug the mic. Just like enough. So stock down, Kevin Hart.
Yeah, somehow he was the only thing worse than the game that happened.
Damn.
I'm going to stay in the NBA All-Star Weekend. I'm going to give a stock down to Kevin Durant. Because this guy He's the only guy that somehow left All-Star Weekend more miserable than Draymond Green.
He's always miserable.
Because everyone was all focused on Draymond Green. And to Draymond Green's point, he has some people that actually agree with his takes about whether or not the Rising Star should have been in there if this was the right format.
I'm some people.
But at the same time, Ray, Kevin Durant comes in yesterday and says, all you people do is complain. We can't do anything right. Let's just cancel All-Star Weekend together. What's wrong with this guy? He is the human embodiment of wet blanket. You're 7 feet tall. You have one of the most awesome gifts to ever grace this NBA sport, which is your ability to handle and shoot at your size. Why are you so bitter?
Why is he so miserable?
Why are you so miserable,
He's
dog?
The embodiment of take your ball and go home.
Yeah.
He doesn't like something, yeah. Trade request. And he doesn't like the All-Star game, don't play it anymore.
And the lack of awareness. Like, you are the guy that we feel like is take your ball and go home guy. We feel like you are the I quit guy when things don't go your way. And then here you are going on social media where all the fans want is to see you.
Yeah.
The biggest complaint about All-Star Weekend was we didn't see enough of the stars and we didn't see enough of those guys playing with the accountability and the effort that they should give. And his answer is, know what? No All-Star game for you. He's like the All-Star game Nazi. He's like the soup Nazi. No All-Star for you.
He will turn this car around and you'll get nothing.
Dude, stock down to Kevin Durant.
Put it on a couple different things with Durant there. Feels like his stock is plummeting. Anyway, all right, last one, stock up from me. Manny, you got the sound here. So I did watch a lot of the SNL 50th anniversary.
Right.
Without a doubt, the funniest moment was Eddie Murphy doing a Tracy Morgan impersonation in front of Tracy Morgan.
Well, you gotta have a lot of money if you're gonna live like I live. I eat 4 cheese lasagna. If it only got 3 cheeses, I ain't eating it.
Yes, okay. We hear you, Tracy Morgan.
I refuse to ingest 3 cheeses.
4 cheeses. You're right. 4 cheeses. We got it, Tracy Morgan. Thank you.
It was during a sketch they called Black Jeopardy, which they've done a few times, and Tracy Morgan is there, and I think he appreciated it.
Oh, yeah.
But it was time. 4 cheeses. I mean,
it was spot on, too.
Oh, so good. Eddie Murphy's the GOAT. Stock Absolutely. Up for Eddie Murphy to, I don't know if he saved the SNL 50, but he was definitely the high point.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't get to watch it, but that clip went out almost immediately as the top clip to watch, and it was awesome.
That
and
one
I love Tracy Morgan, too. So.
What's that?
The Ronaldo one as well. I saw that one.
Oh,
I didn't see the Ronaldo one.
No, they brought back
Pedro Pascal and Bad Bunny.
Yeah, so it's actually Domingo.
Right.
Is the name of the sketch. It's basically a recurring sketch about how this woman keeps cheating on her fiance at her bachelorette party with Domingo. Then it turns out Domingo's got a brother, Ronaldo, and it's Pedro Pascal. And then Bad Bunny comes in and he's the third brother. And he's sleeping with the mom.
Bad Bunny.
I love Bad Bunny, but that sketch just was like 5 minutes too long.
Okay.
There you go.
I love Tracy Morgan. I love Eddie Murphy. So that was definitely a highlight of scene.
Yeah. If you didn't watch it, I just saved you 3 hours of. This is a 3 cheese lasagna was the funniest one. You got another stock up?
Yeah, I'll give one more stock up here. I will go to the Bay Area music scene. Nothing went right really for All-Star Weekend except for I mentioned Mac McClung. I thought the halftime show was pretty good. I'll be honest, it was DJ Cassidy who's doing the Pass the Mic, which he's famous for, and he brought out Too Short, E-40, Saweetie, and En Vogue as a Bay Area tribute, and they rocked the house. I thought halftime?
That's what
I know. It was weird.
The entire game was halftime.
They didn't even play basketball, really.
Yeah, I think it was technically in between the second game and the third game, so that was what they considered halftime. But anyway, they did this performance, and I was already PO'd at what happened throughout the entire night. But I was jamming. I was like, wow, En Vogue, they looked awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even realize Saweetie was from the Bay Area. So you got a younger person in there. E-40 is not everybody's cup of tea, but I thought he did a good job. Too Short's always fun. And I thought that was one of the few highlights from that All-Star Sunday night. So shout out to the Bay Area and their music scene. They represented in that moment.
Yeah, I saw Rafael Sadiq, right, was doing the player intros.
Gave some clean dap to EJ. To Ernie Johnson, he gave him some clean dap.
I thought you said dap to me. I was like, I never met Rafael Sadiq.
The other EJ.
Yeah. I wish I met Rafael Sadiq. He's a phenomenal artist.
855-212-4227. That's a little M&P 500. Whose stock is up, whose stock is down after a very eventful weekend. All right, coming up, we get to talk to a Hall of Famer, multiple Hall of Fames, the legendary coach from both North Carolina and Kansas. That would be the great Roy Williams, who joins us next. What does he think about the state of the Duke-UNC rivalry and so much more? Don't move.
Welcome back to the Maggie and Perloff Show. Perloff still on vacation in Costa Rica, so it's me and EJ who get the pleasure of interviewing a three-time national championship, a man who's in multiple Hall of Fames. That would be the legendary college basketball coach, Roy Williams, North Carolina, Kansas. Coach, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate it. How are you?
I'm doing well, and it's good to see you guys and tell Perloff and he's out doing those things, and you two are still doing the job.
You know, we're hard working here, and he's out hanging with monkeys and ziplining in Costa Rica, but we'll send him your best. Now, first of all, you're here because you're teaming up with Verizon, and this is for a very important cause and something close to your heart. Coach, you can coach all over the world, but there's nothing like your hometown. And I know you count Asheville, North Carolina, a place that was devastated by Hurricane Helene, as your hometown. As I mentioned, you're partnering up with Verizon to wipe away $10 million in debt from those who are still dealing with the devastation from that storm. I'm curious, when you first saw the impact that Helene had on your hometown, what were some of the emotions that it brought up?
Well, you know, it was really unreal. I was down in Charleston, South Carolina, when it first hit, and we had some 60-mile-an-hour winds. And I have bungee cords being snapped on the swings on my front porch. And we're out at 4 a.m. trying to tie the shutters down. And then came back to North Carolina. And then it got worse and worse. And 5 days later, I go to Cincinnati. Wes Miller, one of my former players, is the head coach at Cincinnati. I walk in the hotel and turn on the TV to the Weather Channel. And they're broadcasting the entire 60 minutes from Asheville, North Carolina. And they're showing all these scenes of places that I knew. That's where I lived. And showing all the devastation, and it was nothing compared to what it is when you see it in person. And even 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, I went to Knoxville, Tennessee from Asheville, drove to Knoxville, and usually just get on Interstate 40 and go straight there. Now you have to go way around because Interstate 40 is gone. And to see the devastation, even in Biltmore, the little area where I lived in Asheville, I mean, again, this is 10 days ago. I saw trucks and cars in the river, and they're going to be there. And buildings that were there are destroyed. And, you know, people can't, it's been about 100 days now, and it's going to be 1,000 days before those places come back. And I know people have lost loved ones, lost jobs, lost homes, lost businesses. So I'm so thankful that Verizon is doing something to help out some of these people. And it's been a neat deal for me. I'm old school, so neat may not mean very much to somebody else, but it's been a neat deal for me this morning calling some of these people that Verizon's been helping out, and it's very emotional for them.
Oh, I'm sure. We're talking with former North Carolina head coach Roy Williams, who's teaming up with Verizon to wipe away $10 million in debt from people who are still trying to deal with the devastation from Hurricane Helene. It's a place that you call home. We're on in those many of those areas, Coach. Our radio show hits a lot of those areas. And so we're always sending our absolute best for everyone who's still dealing with that wreckage and devastation. Turning to basketball, there are a lot of people who are very curious to get your opinion on the Tar Heels. What's the state of the program right now, Coach? 15-11, 8-6 in ACC play, not ranked, which is a place we're not used to seeing North Carolina men's basketball. How would you assess where they are right now?
Well, I'm sad because I want us to be 26-0 or whatever number it ends up being. But I have a tremendous amount of confidence in Hubert Davis and our staff. And I've said this jokingly over my career, but it's true. I've looked at the Constitution of the United States of America. And in the Constitution, it does not say that North Carolina has to win every game. You know, sometimes Wake Forest or Duke or State or, you know, other schools, Michigan State. It's okay. It's not in the Constitution that we have to win all the time. But in saying that, deep in my heart and my soul, I want us to win all the time. And the North Carolina fans have been spoiled rotten, and we're still going to be spoiled rotten because we're going to win. And I'm thinking that we're going to go on a great run here at the end of the year. I think we'll make the tournament. We'll go on that great run. And Coach Davis, people don't realize this, the last recruit that I helped sign when I was Coach Dean Smith's assistant was Hubert Davis. So we go back a long way. He's the nicest person I've ever known in my life who is also fiercely competitive. And that's a great combination right there. And we need a couple more shots to go in, a couple of the other team's shots not to go in. And we need to play well the last two or three weeks here and get in the tournament and make some noise.
Three-time national champion and Hall of Fame coach Roy Williams joining us on behalf of Verizon, working to help people who have suffered at the hands of Hurricane Helene dig out from that devastation. You know, Coach, so much changes in college basketball, college football. It seems like every day there's just another change. Do you worry with realignment still in the atmosphere and so many changes still yet to be revealed that the Duke-North Carolina rivalry could ever take a hit or could ever be watered down because of everything that's happening around college sports?
Well, I think it has changed dramatically. I mean, I was a head coach for 33 years, and if you had told me 33 years ago what's going on now, I would have thought you were an idiot. But it's still college basketball, college football. People are going to care about it because people need recreation. People need something to get out away from their own set and doing the radio show or doing something like this. And athletics gives us that entertainment value. I can tell you this, that Duke, North Carolina, and I agree, it's by far the best rivalry in all of college sports in my mind, but I know it is in college basketball. I think that college basketball has dramatically changed over the last few years. Some of those are going to filter down, and some of them are going to explode, and hopefully 10 years from now, we'll be in a much better place than we are. I love the idea of NIL, name, image, and likeness. I love that. I think kids should be able to. Peyton Manning, his last year at Tennessee, they sold 50,000 jerseys with his name on it. Peyton Manning should have got some of that money. I'm not against that. But what we have right now is not exactly what was intended, and I think we need to do a better job of managing that. I would like there be more of a commitment. I'm not against a young man transferring, but now, come on now. We got guys that are playing in four schools in 4 years. I believe in a commitment. I'm old school, so I think some small changes could be made for the better. But when Duke and North Carolina tee it up this 2 weeks from Saturday, I guess, or 10 years from Saturday, it's still going to be the biggest freaking show in America. So that's the way I believe in it all the time.
Coach, there's some talk to expand the tournament to 76 teams. I know you've probably heard this for many, many years. Would you like to see the tournament expanded?
I'm okay with where it is. I was okay when it was 64. There's a carrot at the end of the year out there that everybody has an opportunity to play in. And I like something that is very difficult. So for me, I would probably keep it very close, if not exactly what we have right now. And yet, I'm not one of those guys in charge looking out trying to see the big picture. I care about North Carolina and players, former players coaching where they live, like Wes Miller at Cincinnati, as I said. And, you know, I'm a fan of college basketball, but I'm really a fan of my teams.
We get that. Coach, EJ had a question for you. Go ahead, EJ.
Yeah, Coach, I had a question because I heard Hubert Davis a couple of weeks ago say that the old ways of Carolina basketball do not work today. And you are one of the godfathers, along with the great Dean Smith, of the old ways of Carolina basketball. Do you feel like, A, you agree with that assessment from Coach Davis, and B, if that is the case, is there a little sadness that comes from you hearing something like that, considering how much college basketball has changed? And I know how much you live and die Carolina blue.
Well, no, it did not make me sad. What made me sad is the way people interpreted it. The game on the court, Hubert is still teaching, share the ball, run, be willing to help your teammates, all those kind of things. But everything around the court has changed. And we didn't have to put up with how much money are you going to give my son? You know, that's not what it was. And so we went in a home, and I used to tell people, I'm going to see you more than any other coach. I'm going to call you every Sunday night at 9:15. And those kind of things don't make as big a difference anymore. There is not, I said earlier, the commitment. It used to be very hard. When you'd get a guy, you were going to say, well, he's going to be here 4 years unless he goes to the NBA. Well, you don't have that now. So the model of what we had for so long with Coach Smith and myself, the way we ran, there were not dramatic changes in college basketball during the time period from when Coach Smith started till I quit. And all of a sudden, the last 5 years, hello, Pete. I mean, it's changed. It's a different animal out there now. So people have taken those quotes of Hubert and put it into areas it didn't deserve to be. Hubert still believes in doing it the North Carolina way on the court, but everything around that has changed tremendously. And, you know, he's talking about getting the general manager, and other teams already have that. And those are things that need to be done.
Just another minute or two with the Hall of Fame coach, Roy Williams. You know, coach, there is another big time coach on campus now. Does have the GM, is trying to figure everything out on the football side. It's Bill Belichick. I can't imagine, you know, I must have imagined you were stunned like the rest of us that he decided to go to North Carolina. What are some of the conversations you've had with Coach Belichick, and any advice you gave him on how to, you know, navigate the waters in Chapel Hill?
Well, Maggie, come on now. I coached high school football for 4 years. I've not given Bill Belichick any suggestions. He's the greatest coach in my lifetime. You know, I mean, he's 8 Super Bowls, 6, 7 as a head coach. I think I'm getting that right. We've had conversations, 2 straight Saturdays of home basketball games. At halftime, I go into the practice gym and visit with 15 to 30 of his recruits, and have enjoyed doing that. He was, as a toddler, his father coached at North Carolina, and so there is some background there. But Coach Belichick is going to be fantastic. He is looking at the new model for college football, and he does have a GM, and Lombardi is great, and I've enjoyed meeting him. But I'm looking for fantastic things from North Carolina football, and perhaps we will learn some things from Coach Belichick, and perhaps he will learn some things from Coach Davis in our basketball program. But I'm all for it, and I'm very happy to have him.
Coach, I want to do a couple rapid-fire questions for you, if you don't mind. Here we go. And again, thank you so much for being so generous with your time today on behalf of a great cause, teaming up with Verizon to help those who have been impacted by Hurricane Helene. Here's a couple rapid-fire questions for you. Who is the best pure athlete that you ever coached?
Woo. A guy named Darren Hancock when I was coaching at Carolina, at Kansas. He could jump over the moon and do everything. He was as fast as you could possibly be, but pure athlete. I'd say Darren Hancock.
Who's the smartest player you ever coached?
2 of them are on North Carolina's bench now. I had 5 guys at the top, and 2 of them are on the bench. That's Marcus Page and Sean May.
Who's the one recruit that you really wanted that got away?
Oh, there's about 100. I'll tell you one so some people can have fun with it, but I've told Mike this too. Shane Battier, I really wanted Shane Battier. I was coaching at Kansas at that time, and I just thought bringing in Shane would do so much for our program. We already had Jock Vaughn, who was the academic All-American Player of the Year, so we had some other people like that, but I would say Shane.
And who's the player who had the strangest eating habits?
Strangest eating habits. Good gracious. Kendall Marshall. He was a point guard, and he passed the ball to everybody. And when he got the food, he didn't pass it to anybody. But Kendall will kill me when he hears that. But he was one of the 5 smartest players I ever coached, too. But Kendall loved to eat.
Last one for you. The player you coached who had a much better NBA career than you ever expected, completely exceeded your expectations.
Well, I think, you know, Paul Pierce was the greatest player ever coached. He's in the Hall of Fame. The best college player ever coached was Tyler Hansbrough, 4-time first-team All-American. But Danny Green goes from a second-round draft choice to play in 15 years, I think it was, in the NBA, and winning 3 world championships for 3 different teams. So I think I love Danny, to say the least, but I think that would be the one that if you went to put things down on paper, he would be the one to answer there.
Coach, I think this is a great place to leave it. Again, you know, you are lending your time and your celebrity to team up with Verizon to try to help your hometown, a place that is so near and dear to you, Asheville and Western Carolina, and wiping out $10 million in debt from those who are still dealing with the fallout from that awful hurricane, Hurricane Helene. Coach, thank you so much for your time today and fantastic work that you're doing with Verizon to help people in need.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Be sure to tell Perloff this was a great event for the last 15 minutes.
You know, maybe because he wasn't here, Coach. Maybe because he wasn't
I'll
here.
Let you guys figured out who you want to handle that.
Oh, just kidding.
I will definitely tell him that, Coach. Trust
okay,
me.
Okay, Elijah. I know.
Coach, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, guys.
Having some fun with the Hall of Famer there. So a couple things. Perloff would have been great. They know each other, obviously, from the Perloff's Dan Patrick days. So Coach Roy Williams, very familiar with McLovin's work. But if you're Kendall Marshall, are you insulted by the fact that Coach did say you were one of the smartest players ever?
That's
and
true.
As a point guard, you could pass, you could really dish the rock, but never met a meal he didn't like.
You got to, right? I mean, come on. You're a point guard. You're not an offensive lineman in a football team. Like, you're supposed to be, in theory, the most in-shape guy on the roster. And he's saying you ate a lot, maybe a little too much. Especially looking at Kendall Marshall. I think if he wasn't the first-round pick, he might have been a second-round pick. Like, he's a guy that could have had an NBA career and didn't, you know who knows why. But
Lakers
it makes me,
legend.
Right, I knew he played for the Lakers. And part of me was just like, I mean, was it because he wasn't in the right shape? I was
I
like,
know.
Man, Roy.
Reminder
just,
that Ray Felton also walked the streets of Chapel Hill.
But when Ray Felton was there, he didn't look like Knicks Ray Felton, like he had eaten the other Ray Felton. It's funny, when I asked that question, who had the like most interesting eating habits, I thought he was going to say somebody like, ate Skittles before every game.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know.
I did too, yeah.
Had to eat the same meal. I didn't realize Coach was going to go to a place ate the most.
Look, we had the guy on on the Carolina Panthers from South Carolina talk about, eating raccoons.
Oh, Xavier Legette.
I thought maybe we would go somewhere like that. Like, he's gotten recruited some players from the South. Maybe they had some weird eating habits in terms of
eating squirrels and stuff.
Yeah, squirrels or weird animals. I didn't think it'd be, just the volume. The volume,
the dude at the buffet, way too hard.
The volume of what Kendall Marshall was eating was a problem. He didn't want to share the rock. Well, he shared the rock, not the plates.
What's also funny is we were talking about asking Coach Williams who's the one recruit that got away, like the guy who he really wanted. He said when he was at Kansas, he really wanted Shane Battier. And you said to me a little while ago, Shane Battier is one of those guys where you can't even imagine him going to a different school.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could have never been like, Gonzaga legend Shane Battier. Like,
exactly.
It just doesn't fit.
Yeah, and particularly with the Duke guys. There's something about them. I don't know what
JJ
it is.
J.J. Redick could not have gone to the University of Maryland.
Like, no.
It just wouldn't have been the same.
No, it would not have worked. So when he said Shane Battier, I was like, I'm sure the Jayhawk fans would have loved to have Shane Battier. I can't see him rock chalk Jayhawking after a win. I don't see it. You can see it?
Well, you got to remember, the North Carolina Roy Williams teams and the Kansas Roy Williams teams, a lot different. I could see Shane Battier fitting in the Kansas era for Roy Williams.
With the Kirk Heinrichs and the Nick Collisons?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay.
But he didn't mention it on our show. He did coach Paul Pierce, too.
Yep.
He had some ballers at Kansas as well.
Laker fan here. I don't even know what that name means.
Yeah, sure.
Fair enough.
You're familiar. 855-212-4227. A little too familiar. Okay, coming up, we're going to take a quick break because we went a little long there with Coach Roy Williams, who we appreciate. We'll come back. Dexter's got the latest headlines, including a major shakeup in baseball, which is front page stuff, which we will get to, and also the new changes proposed for college football. So we get to all of that next. Hang tight. It's Maggie and Perloff. EJ's in for Perloff today.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's the Maggie and Perloff show. EJ Stewart's in for Perloff for the rest of the week as Perloff's on a well-deserved vacation. If you missed our interview with Roy Williams, the Hall of Famer, he was fantastic. The rapid-fire questions, awesome. Him talking about most athletic people he's ever coached, craziest eating habits, one recruit that got away. So cool. You can check out the Maggie and Perloff podcast wherever you get your pods. And if you would leave us a 5-star review, it's a small thing that really goes a far way. Chris is in Sacramento, wants to weigh in on the proposed changes that could be coming to the college football playoff, where the Big Ten and the SEC are going to get even more power. They're hoping for 4 automatic bids each. Chris, do you like this power move or do you not like it?
So I don't mind it, but I think they should do a relegation style, like the bottom four team, like get a top 50, 25 in each conference, and the bottom four teams, bottom two in each conference, get relegated in the FCS or whatever you want to call it, get changed to the get it back up into the thing. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, soccer style where it'd be like in down to the FCS. Now, here's the thing. It's not a bad idea. I actually don't mind it.
Okay.
The one thing about it, Chris, and thank you for the phone call and holding tight for us. If you have the top 50 programs, only relegating four doesn't seem like enough.
No, it's definitely not enough, I don't think. I don't think that's enough at all. And the issue I have, too, is there's a lot of turnover from year to year in terms of who's good and who's bad.
Especially like, now with the transfer portal.
Like, we had TCU in the national championship game, and the next year they won, like, what, four games or whatever?
Like, yeah,
they,
like in Indiana this
right,
year.
Right. Like, so, like, they would, in theory, feel like, okay, like, they belong in the top 50, but sometimes you have one-year wonders. Or you have a team like Indiana, let's say, who had a great season, and maybe they're in the bottom tier, so to speak, and they play their way into the top tier, but guess what? All those guys that were seniors that got them to there are gone. So who's to say that they're going to still be at that same level? So that would be the issue, is you may be a year too early or a year too late in terms of rewarding teams.
Yeah, because with soccer, guys are professional soccer, so you're assigned to longer-term contracts.
Exactly.
So you kind of understand who's going to be on the team and who's not.
But when you do get relegated, your wages do get lowered.
Right, so you don't have as much money to spend.
Correct, yeah. Your contract is a little bit different because your team isn't making as much money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. Yeah. I'll tell you what, these aren't the only changes that are going to be coming. And this expansion that they're going to be proposing here to go to 12 teams, to 14, to 16, whatever, that's not going to be the end.
The minute that a legacy program that has been underachieving for so many years, the minute they get relegated, the amount of, I'm thinking about like Nebraska unfortunately. I'm thinking about some of these schools that we keep saying when they're going to be great again. I think about my beloved Miami Hurricanes. I think about a lot of schools. Florida State last year won, what, three games? Like, they would be relegated. Like, the jokes and the memes and the way we would clown those organizations and those schools if they got relegated, part of me kind of was
Oklahoma. A couple seasons with Texas weren't that great.
There would be, the headaches that those administrations and those communities would have in terms of dealing with relegation.
Yeah.
For these blue bloods, so to speak. That would be torture.
Well, the other part, too, is the TV networks. They don't want, no matter what, like I was watching college basketball over the weekend. I'm watching North Carolina play Syracuse. Neither team's ranked.
They're
it's on big
terrible.
ESPN. ESPN2 actually had two ranked teams going against each other. But because it wasn't UNC and Cuse, like, I think that the networks still want the blue bloods, even
absolutely.
If there are down years. Dexter Henry, catch us up on all the latest, sir.
All right, catch you up on some of the latest. When Juan Soto bounced from the Yankees and signed a 15-year, $765 million deal with the crosstown rival New York Mets, the star outfielder said that he made the decision in part due to his belief that the Mets gave him the best chance to win over the next 15 years.
Sure.
So, Yankee slugger Aaron Judge, he was asked on Monday about Soto's comments. Here's his response.
That's his opinion. He can say what he wants. I definitely disagree with him, but
that's my captain.
I wasn't too surprised by it. I think that's where he wanted to be. I think that's where it was best for him and his family. And he got a pretty nice deal over there. So I think you can't say no to that. But I'm happy for him. He got a good deal. He's going to be in a great spot. It's going to be great having him in town. We're going to be battling back and forth for quite a few years. So I'm definitely happy for him.
So
sounds real, real pleased.
Sounds real happy.
So happy for you.
So happy.
So thrilled that you were on our team. Go to the World Series. You could take some of the load from me, but no, I'm so happy for you.
It's like when you see your ex gone and you meet them and you see they have a new husband or a new wife. And you're just like, oh, I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, it's like, wow, richer and better looking, huh?
So happy
cool.
for you.
Cool. So happy for you. Although it's funny the judge said that that's where he wanted to be. Like,
that was
do you get a sense that Juan Soto never really was all 2 feet in with the Yankees? Listen, you got to the World Series, so who cares? But
he was
going
to the Mets, man.
He didn't pick up the phone when he left. Like, they couldn't find
change
him. They couldn't
talk to him.
Change his number.
Yeah.
Cold-blooded.
So I think Judge has a reason to feel that way.
Yeah. He's got a right, to be in his feelings a little bit. The NFL franchise tag window opens today, runs until 4 p.m. on March 4th. Maggie, your Bills, they have not used a franchise tag in the past seven off seasons under Brandon Bean. EJ, your Jets, they've got seven starters set to become unrestricted free agents. Do either of you see your teams using the franchise tag on a player over the next 2 weeks?
Bills take care of their players, sign them to contract extensions. No need for the franchise tag.
Yeah, I don't see it with the Jets either. I don't know who they would give it to with the guys they have as free agents. So
T. Higgins is probably the biggest one, right?
Yep.
And is there anyone else we're looking at for franchise tags here? Maybe Sam Darnold? If the Vikings want to play a little hardball here?
That would be an interesting franchise tag. And in some ways,
it'd be smarter
That'd be the most. That'd be the best case scenario, right? You don't have to buy into him long term.
Hey, you franchise tag him and trade him.
Yeah, or if he comes back, like, okay, J.J. McCarthy, you got one more year to watch, and then we throw you back out there, and then Sam Darnold, see you later. I think they would love that situation. If I was Sam Darnold, I would not sign that thing. I would say, all right, I'm gonna take this right into the regular season, and we'll just play hardball until then, because I think that he still has the leverage in that situation. But that would be the Vikings' dream. They can't find a way to get an upgrade.
See, if they're like, we'll tag you, but we'll trade you, I'll take that. But I wouldn't mind it. The problem is you don't get to decide where you want to go.
Right, and you lose that power.
He's not sitting out the year. It's not Le'Veon Bell.
No, but I don't think he'll be in a position where that would make sense for the Vikings to go that far with this thing, and he's not on the team. Because I think that he has that leverage, right? Like, then a team that has super aspirations is going with J.J. McCarthy. That's not their answer. They would prefer to get an upgrade over Sam Darnold. They prefer to go after a Matthew Stafford or someone else who they think may be better. If it's not Sam Darnold, that's the answer.
How about the Eagles? Should they tag anybody?
Who do they got?
Zach Bond, Josh Sweat.
Oh, Zach Bond.
Bond was the guy I kept thinking about with Philly.
I would tag Sweat.
I would too.
I don't think you can do it again without him. Zach Bond had the big interception.
I would do Bond. I think the franchise tag for linebackers is going to be a lot less than probably for a defensive end. Yes, it's 1 year, but you're paying Sweat a ton of money. You're talking about top 10 salary for a defensive end.
Man, I want to try to repeat, though, and I need Sweat for that.
Yeah.
Manny Rodriguez, great job. Thank you to Ray and to Dexter. You guys are fantastic. Rami, who's pitching in today and doing a great job, the best. EJ, thank you as well. And we'll see you tomorrow.